Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, and welcome.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
To In the Field, a new podcast by IB Times UK. Each week, we talk to journalists and stringers, activists and authors about the global stories that matter. This week, we're speaking to Liz Castro, a writer and publisher who is active in the movement for independence for Catalonia, the northeastern province of Spain. Last week, former Catalan president Artur Mas and two ministers were in court on charges of trying to hold a referendum on independence from Spain. If convicted, Mas faces a 10-year ban on holding political office. The case brought tens of thousands of Catalans back to the streets, but got relatively little coverage outside of Spain.
Well, it's a big story in Catalonia. I kind of doubt that it has reached Spain because they tend to play down these kind of cases in which they're sort of using this heavy judicial process to squash a movement for independence.
The independence campaign for a referendum has obviously been going on for how long now?
Well, you know, people have been, Catalonia was independent in the 12th and 13th centuries. So it's been going on for a really long time. Catalonia lost its own constitutions in 1714,
right,
at the end of War of Spanish Succession. So, but the current, you know, surge in pro-independence movement dates to around 2006, which is when the new Statute of Autonomy is negotiated between the Catalan and the Spanish parties. And it's the best possible scenario for finding a better fit for Catalonia with Spain. And the Spanish government kind of takes advantage of it and keeps insisting that the demands be less lessened, demands that you know, things like being able to control the airport. There are still airlines that aren't allowed to fly only to Barcelona. They always have to go to Madrid. Things about tax collection, things about education. And so that there's this attempt to create a better statute of autonomy, a better charter for Catalonia, which pretty much fails.
Right.
And yet it's passed. It's passed, so it's accepted as this is the best that we can do in 2006. But even then, the crux of this is that the Popular Party in Madrid brings a suit against the Statute of Autonomy. So even though it's not, it has been through this kind of grueling process in Catalonia, and people are pretty unsatisfied with it, the Spanish government brings a suit against it, and the Popular Party, excuse me. And then there's these 4 long years in which this trial goes slowly through the constitutional court, a very politicized constitutional court, and the constitutional court ends up watering it down even further. And this is seen as a huge blow to Catalonia's dignity, really, because they had already said, all right, we'll accept this, even though it's not good enough. And then they say, no, you pull down your pants. Basically, it's humiliation, and that's when the very first huge demonstration takes place in July 10th, 2010.
Right,
that's really seen as this watershed moment when the Constitutional Court rules against some very basic principles: Catalonia being able to call itself a nation, the Catalan language being given preferential treatment in schools, for example, and the process about the Statute of Autonomy has kicked up a lot of stuff already, and so. Already by 2009, there's people who are saying that, you know, we really need to be able to decide this in a democratic way. We need a referendum.
Mm.
And they start holding referendums the first one was in a very small town, 8,000 people at the end of 2009. The Spanish government says, no, you're not allowed to have a non-official, non-binding poll in a town about 8,000 people about Catalan independence. That's illegal. And people say, well, you know, we're going to do it anyway. And they do it in this completely non-official way. And thousands of people flood into the tiny little town. Of course, only the people in the town vote. More people vote from the town officially in that non-official poll on independence than had voted for, you know, the Statute of Autonomy or other things. But mostly it attracts tons of people who say, oh, wow, maybe we could do these polls, these non-official citizen-led polls in our towns too. And so they start having these polls all over Catalonia. There's 500 of them. 800,000 people participate. There's like 60,000 volunteers in every little town. There's a committee of 10 or 15 people who start canvassing their neighbors and start having conferences and get the people to say, all right, we're going to ask you what you think about independence. Mm. And we're just people. We're not the government, but we're going to vote on it anyway. And that leads to the Catalan National Assembly and these huge demonstrations that we see in the next 5 years.
And which brings us really up to today. And there's still been a lot of protests even this year, right?
There have been. So that brings us to these massive demonstrations every year on September 11th, which is Catalonia's National Day. And they're all about having an official referendum to decide independence, because Spain says, this is the crazy part, Spain says you're not allowed to ask that question, whether it's official, non-official, you know, participatory process, it's completely illegal to ask about Catalan independence. And people say, well, that's crazy. Of course we can ask people's opinion. And so there's a non-official, this participatory process in 2014, 80% of the people vote yes. They would like Catalonia to be an independent state. And then to legitimize that non-official poll, we say, okay, we're going to have plebiscitary elections in September 2015. And those are complicated because they're regular parliamentary elections. And the idea is that if you vote for a party that's in favor of independence, that's a yes vote. And if you vote for a party that's against Catalan independence, that's a no vote. And that part works fine, except that there are some parties who say, we don't want to play this game. Mm. And if you vote for us, we don't have a position. And 11% of the people vote for them. So there's 48% that vote to yes parties, there's 39% that vote to no parties, and 11% that vote to parties that haven't positioned themselves. So it doesn't really work as a referendum, even though it's the only legal way to have a vote on the question.
That's a lot closer than I thought, 38 to 40, 49. Yeah,
I mean 48 to 39. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it would be a lot. I thought it would be a lot more of a landslide for the pro Catalan independence.
Well, part of the thing is that we haven't ever had a yes, an official yes-no vote. So it'd be interesting to see exactly what the vote would be if we do get to, have that yes-no question. Because the problem with combining the referendum with parliamentary elections is that you can't vote yes or no without voting for a particular party, and that makes it so that it's not a clear answer. And that's why the new Catalan president said, we're going to have an official referendum, a binding official referendum with or without permission from the Spanish state. We're going to do it no matter what. We want to do it with, you know, the way that Scotland did it with this negotiated agreement with Spain. But if they refuse to allow that, refuse to negotiate, we're going to do it anyway. And this is huge. And he said, this is going to happen before September 2017. And meanwhile, the reaction of the Spanish state has been to say, again, the way it always says, you're not allowed to talk about that. You're not allowed to ask that question. And on top of that, we're going to bring people who are working towards it to court. So the former president and two of his ministers who organized that 2014 vote were in court this week, as you mentioned. Mm. On charges that they allowed a non-official participatory process about Catalan independence, even though the Constitutional Court said they weren't allowed to, which is obscene. Yeah. Why can't you ask people what they want? I mean, that's democracy, right? And they face 10 years of being banned from holding public office. Mm. It's no joke. The Catalan president of the parliament, sort of a speaker of the house, she has been charged with allowing a debate in Parliament about Catalan independence. That is the charge against her. And she could also face being banned from public office. And I think she might face jail term. I'm not sure. But that's just crazy. We have to be able to discuss this issue in a democratic way, have a debate about it, inform the people about the advantages and disadvantages, and then let them vote. That's how democracy works. And so from civil society, from the community organizations who are in favor of independence, we insist that, one, this referendum go forward, this official binding referendum, and that we handle this in a democratic way, that Spain doesn't, you know, bring everybody to court and intimidate the democratic process in this way.
What do you think is Spain's big problem with it? Is it the fact that if the Catalans vote, they will probably vote for independence and then Spain will have to allow them to do so? And then you might see the other regions, the Basque region, for instance, also wanting that. Or is it just that Barcelona and Catalonia is very important to Spain, you know, economically?
I think it's both of those things. It's Spain doesn't want to lose Catalonia's economic contributions, definitely. Catalonia has about 16% of the population, but something like 19% of GDP and some incredible number, which I don't have on hand, of exports and industry. And so it's a very important part economically of Spain. It's also true that it could encourage other nationalities, other nations in Spain to want to voice their own desires for independence, the Basque Country being a prime example, although the Basque Country right this moment is not at that point. Personally, I think the real issue is pride. I think it makes Spain feel bad, the Spanish government feel bad that Catalonia doesn't want to be part of it. Mm. And it's an emotional reaction. It's a, you're not allowed to leave. You're part of us. And that there's this crazy thing that people tell you when you say you don't feel Spanish. They say, yeah, but what does it say on your ID card? You know, as if what's written on your ID card kind of informs your feelings, as if being Spanish was something you're stuck with. It's very bizarre. Instead of embracing the differences that coexist within Spain, instead of the Spanish government saying, you know, this is really great that we have this other language, this Catalan language. We should encourage that. We should promote it. We should respect it. We should love it. We should, you know, or all of the different things that are Catalonia. Those things are not embraced and encouraged and welcomed. They're pressed aside. They're thought of as diverse, you know, why do you speak that language? The Spanish government is constantly trying to reduce the amount that Kafalan is used in school. It's reduced the amount that's used in movies, in the media, in court cases. Something like 3% of court cases are carried out in Catalan, in Catalonia. Mm. Instead of embracing this amazing culture, and not only Catalan, but also Basque, also Galician. And so that feeling of not being respected, not being cared about by the central government is not just from Catalonia, but it's definitely this, it's a really huge part of it.
Yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I mean, in terms of how many people do speak Catalan in Catalonia? I mean, is it a big proportion? It's not like Welsh where it's, you know, not, or something, or another language like that.
No, there's a difference in the question between how many people can speak it and how many people do speak it.
Right.
Almost everybody, I think it's like 93% can speak Catalan, but that doesn't mean that they all do. Something like 85% or something can read Catalan. That doesn't mean that they necessarily would choose to buy a book in Catalan over Spanish, but they can, which is, I think, is really different from other languages and in other places. And so it's really interesting. People are often use both languages in their day to day. They might speak Catalan with their family, and then maybe they would speak Spanish in a particular setting at work, or some people might only speak Catalan in most of their interactions, but that doesn't mean that they can't speak Spanish, or vice versa. So I think that Catalan as a first language is something on the order of 38%. Catalan is a very diverse society. Something like 60% of the people have one or both parents are from outside of Catalonia. That's something that's just really interesting about Catalan. It doesn't want to be ethnically pure. To be Catalan, you just have to want to be Catalan.
But that's why I can see the argument against perhaps using Catalan in schools or in court cases, because for two things. I mean, firstly, not everybody understands it or can speak it. And secondly, you know, for young kids going out into the world, perhaps leaving Spain, maybe there's an argument that Catalan's not as useful to them as Spanish.
Well, I would disagree, partly because, the Catalan immersion schools, it's true that they are mostly in Catalan, or they're supposed to be mostly in Catalan, but it's also true that kids graduate from school knowing both languages. It's not that they come out only speaking Catalan. Mm. The education system works so that most of the instruction is given in Catalan, but that doesn't mean that kids don't learn Spanish elsewhere. And they learn grammar in school. Just like in an English school, you're not teaching English all day long. You're teaching math, and you're teaching geometry, and you're teaching history, and you're teaching whatever. And you actually have, in English instruction, maybe you have 3 hours a week or 5 hours a week, something like that. Well, that's the same here. You know, you have however many hours of Spanish instruction a week, and then the actual classes are in Catalan, because kids get so much exposure to Spanish other places. They don't need to have all of their classes in Spanish. Mm. And in fact, if more school was in Spanish, if those classes weren't in Spanish, so kids had less exposure to Catalan, that would divide kids into groups. Then you'd have kids who only speak Spanish, and then you'd have some that spoke Spanish and Catalan. And the kids who spoke Spanish and Catalan would have an advantage, and there would be this division. Why do that? In fact, kids graduate from Catalan immersion schools, Catalan is public education, knowing both languages, and they get better grades in Spanish than kids in other parts of Spain. Right. So it's not like they're losing anything. It's not like, you know, it's not like kids aren't allowed to learn Spanish. That's absurd. You know, my American-born children already speak Spanish after being here 3 years, and they're in public education. So the system works, basically. And it's a way of not dividing up the kids into these two groups, because everybody speaks both.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. And it's gotten all these awards from Europe, and it's a system that works.
I guess my last question would be, here in the UK, we've had two very divisive referendums, one on Scotland and the second on Brexit. Is there not a fear that in the event of a referendum on Catalonia, that it would be equally as divisive and perhaps lead to some of the more negative aspects we've seen from both referendums?
I mean, what does that mean, that something is divisive? It means that people have different opinions about it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people have different opinions about ice cream, and they have different opinions about religion and about football teams and about what political parties they want to vote for. as a society, how do we respond to those differences? Well, it seems to me that we should talk about them, we should debate them, and then if you have to decide a particular policy, then you let people vote. But that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is they're saying, you know, you're not allowed to talk about this. You're not allowed to vote on it. We'll just decide it for you. That seems more divisive to me, mm-hmm. because certainly the issue already exists. It's not like the issue goes away because you say you can't vote about it. The issue continues to exist. And so being able to vote on it would actually be a way of bringing people together, because they would say, the people have decided on this issue and we have agreed on it in this democratic way, and now we can resolve it. Now we can move on and talk about something else. But how can we move on if we don't actually decide this?
Yeah. Listen, thanks so much for your time, Liz. It's been really interesting talking.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking to me.
So that's it from In the Field this week. If you're listening on Acast, we've included rich links to some of Liz's articles. And if you're using iTunes, please don't forget to rate and review us. Thanks for listening and take care.